you have a passion, hobby, or expertise and want to share it with the world, why not do a podcast? The PodStation offers a wide range of packages to make this a reality, ranging from training and support for those who have no idea where to begin, to podcasters who just need somewhere to host their show. With prices starting at a mere £15 per month, you can now get involved in one of the fastest growing entertainment forms in the world without all the headaches. To find out more, visit thepodstation.co.uk/station-packages. And remember, those with passion, podcast. You're listening to Johnson & Boone Solicitors podcast exclusively on the Pod Station.
Welcome everyone to episode 10 of the Johnson & Boone podcast. I'm your host, Mark. With me this week is Rob Boone once again. He was throwing the questions and the topics out to you to decide, I suspect in the hope of getting a week off, but he failed miserably because he's back here again because the topic, which will be unveiled in a moment, happens to fall within his remit within the business. So, hiya, Rob. Welcome back again.
Hiya, Mark. How's it going? Good to see you.
I'm perfectly fine. Last week I was talking about going a little bit stir crazy. This week there's a different issue, which is the lockdown haircut.
Absolutely, yeah. I think everyone seems to have fallen into one or two categories now. You've either shaved the lot off or you look as though you need to shave the lot off.
I am at that second category, but I haven't built up the bravery to give my other half the clippers yet.
No, me neither. And I think if I did, as soon as I did, the barbers would open the next day just as a testament of my luck. So I'll probably hang on in there for now.
very wise indeed. So just quickly, what topic are we going to cover this week? Because we threw it out to the public. What did they come back with?
Yeah, we did. We threw it out again last week in terms of what topic we should be covering this week. And it's been requested that we cover how a partnership is brought to an end. And there's lots of reasons why that would be. The listener who requested it is in a situation whereby they're bringing the partnership that they're in to an end, i.e. they're dissolving the partnership, and both partners are going to go off and do their own thing separately. We're going to go over how that works, how the legal relationship comes to an end, and the different circumstances in which that can take place.
Now, this follows on very much from the previous two episodes that we did. This particular listener is actually using those two previous has used those two previous episodes to make a decision on where they want to go in their direction for their new business structure. If you want to check out those shows, you can do in a whole host of areas. So you can go to the johnsonandboone.co.uk website. There's a podcast section there where they are all listed. If you want to choose one of those episodes, you'll find links to all the major podcast platforms where you can also listen to the shows. You can also subscribe, which means that when the latest episode drops, it will automatically download onto whichever device you use to listen to the show. If all of that sounds a bit too complicated, then don't worry, because if you download the Johnson & Boone mobile app, which is free on both Apple and Android devices, then you can find the podcast section there. You can actually listen to them directly from the mobile app itself, which is even easier to do. So there's a whole host of ways in which you can check out the previous shows, which were about business structures and directors' responsibilities. So leading nicely onto that, we're obviously doing the partner dissolution this week. Before we go on, there's actually some extra advice that you can find both on the website and the mobile app, isn't there, Rob?
Yeah, there is. So off the back of everything that's been happening with the COVID-19 situation recently and all the effects that all UK businesses will have experienced, we've put together a downloadable guide on how businesses may recover from the economic effect of all that. And that's some advice from us and some advice from some other trusted partners. So there's accountancy advice, marketing advice, all sorts of bits and pieces in there. And that's downloadable from our website.
Yeah, so if you go to the johnsonandboone.co.uk website, if you go to the articles section, you'll actually find the Business Recovery Guide article itself. You can also find that in the news section on the mobile app. Or alternatively, you can find the post, which gives you a quick and easy link on the social media platforms. So Johnson & Boone, we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. You can find them all on there. It'll take you through. All that you need to do is just stick in some information there to subscribe to all our news articles and advice tips, because that's what we ultimately aim to do, is to provide you with as much help and assistance as possible, so that hopefully you don't need Johnson & Boone services, but in the event that you do, you at least have the comfort attached to the fact that these are the experts and they can help you absolutely with the problems that you need to face. So check that out. It's a fantastic guide. It's magnificently useful at this, well, it's really useful at this moment in time. Just gives you some pointers, doesn't it, Rob?
Yeah, it really does. It's not a hugely lengthy document, but it contains all of the stuff that you'll need and hopefully get your business back on track after what's happened.
Fantastic. So moving swiftly on to the business at hand, we are going to do partnership dissolution. So I guess we should explain briefly what it is that people are looking to understand when you're talking about this topic.
Yeah, that's right. So the dissolution of a partnership is the phrase that's used for the contractual relationship between the individuals involved coming to an end. And there's often a situation whereby one partner is leaving, maybe there's a partnership with three people in it, and one partner is leaving. There is still a technical situation there where that partnership is dissolving, and the other two partners are forming a new partnership in terms of moving forward. So it isn't necessarily just a situation where the business itself is coming to a complete end. It's any dissolution of the partnership in its current format.
Okay, so what you've mentioned there, perhaps the circumstance where you might want to dissolve a partnership. What other circumstances can you come up with that might trigger a person's thought processes that they might need this kind of guidance?
One of the obvious ones, Mark, is when one partner reaches an age whereby they want to retire. So there might be, you know, a partner who's either retiring early or retiring for any reason, really, or any other situation where they want to leave the partnership, maybe for other business interests, and it's by agreement. Absent that, which is a fairly straightforward example, there are a number of ways in which or circumstances in which a partnership might be dissolved, all set out within the Partnership Act. Now, the Partnership Act is actually from 1890, so it's a really historical piece of legislation that hasn't really been updated a great deal over the years, and it still remains in effect now. There's some fairly old wording that is contained within it, but it's quite a manageable and small piece of legislation. I think it will be useful for the purposes of today if we go through the four relevant sections in the Act, because they set out nice and neatly the various situations in which a partnership might be dissolved other than by agreement.
It's strange, isn't it? I guess this highlights the way in which the English legal system works, that you would have a piece of law that is so old that is still being used. Although I suppose you could also say that the person who wrote it must have done such a good job that it is still applicable in 2020.
Yeah, I think probably what's happened is that over time, rather than that piece of legislation having to adapt, the way in which people have done business has adapted. And we see that in the other types of structure, you know, LLPs and limited companies, etc. And obviously all of that is governed by much more recent legislation. And that leaves this act from, you know, as we say, 1890 in place with very little amendments, but actually it's still perfectly fit for use.
Yeah. Okay, so shall we start with the first of the sections that we're going to cover today? What's that one?
Yeah, so the sections we'll cover are sections 32 to 35 of the Act, and we'll do them in order. So if we start with section 32, this is a situation where the dissolution takes place by expiration or by notice. And this is broken down into a few different sections. So it is possible to enter into a partnership for a fixed term, and therefore at the expiry of that fixed term, the partnership will automatically dissolve. Secondly, it's possible to enter into a partnership for, the wording is a single adventure, but if you update that, it means for a single purpose. And once that purpose has been fulfilled, then again, the partnership will dissolve. And then the final one is with notice. So when you enter into a partnership for an undefined period of time, that partnership is able to be dissolved by either party giving notice to the other party of their intention to bring the partnership to a conclusion.
When you say notice, what do you mean? I presume this isn't, I can just tell you while I'm having a beer with you in the pub one Friday night.
In terms of notice, it is quite wide. I mean, the person who's given the notice need not give any reason for giving the notice. It can have immediate effect. And it can just be oral. The only time that it has to be in writing is if the partnership agreement was executed as a deed. If it was just a partnership at will, so it wasn't written down or executed as a deed, then a verbal notice is adequate.
Is that best practice, though?
No, of course not. I mean, best practice in the first place would be to have a partnership agreement in place, and that should always be executed as a deed. So once those and provisions are in place, you would then have to give notice in writing. But I think in any event, you know, if we were ever advising someone who intended to give notice, it's always better to put it in writing, and then it's very clear and there's a recording of not only the notice but also the timing, etc.
Paper trails are always a good way to deal with things, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so number two.
Yeah, so for number two, as I say, we'll move through the sections in order. So we're on to section 33 of the Act, and this is dissolution by bankruptcy, death, or a charge. So subject to any agreement between the partners, every partnership is dissolved in relation to all of the partners by the death or bankruptcy of any partner. Now it is worth saying these things can be varied by the wording in any partnership agreement. But it's fairly standard that they would remain. In relation to a charge, a notice of dissolution would still be required. But it's covering a situation whereby an order of the court is placed for a charge as security for payment of one of the partner's personal debts. But that charge is against the partnership assets.
Okay, just going back before we move on to the charge, the order from the court, which I'm probably going to ask you to just explain for people who aren't entirely certain about that. You mentioned before about the ability to vary the situation. So if you're relying upon this piece of law for deciding what happens to your partnership in the event that there's a death or a bankruptcy of your partner, if there isn't a partnership agreement, the law will kick in and it will dissolve that position. The only scope for you to be able to almost keep that business going. So if there's three partners and one of them goes bankrupt or dies, to avoid that having to be dissolved, you need paperwork in place. You need that agreement in place. Otherwise, the legislation kicks in and you ultimately find that's taken out of your hands.
Yeah, I mean, this is one example of that, but it's a common problem when there's a partnership, they haven't got a partnership agreement in place. And what they don't realise is that by not having a partnership agreement in place, they are governed by this piece of legislation. which they have probably never read and have no understanding as to what the terms of it are. So it's always better to have a partnership agreement in place, even if it is only a basic agreement. And then if any of these things are important to the individuals and they want to vary them in any way, then it can be dealt with as part of the drafting.
Well, worse than that, they're governed by laws that were written in 1890, which, as you said before, are relatively basic in their nature, which is probably why they've survived so long, because they don't go into any complex detail. But I'm pretty certain most people want their business to be determined by laws which are over 130 years old, would you?
No, they wouldn't. And you know, there's lots of things within the Act that aren't mentioned at all that would be mentioned in a partnership agreement. Lots and lots of things. You know, it isn't an overly complex document, but it sits in a similar position as what a shareholders agreement would, in that it's regulating the agreement between the parties and what will happen in lots and lots of different situations. So it's always worth having one in place. But as part of that process, they'll also learn all about the bits and pieces that can't be changed. And then at least they're educated on the points as well.
It clears up the grey areas, doesn't it, really?
Absolutely, yeah.
So going back to the mention about a court order, so going back before, you mentioned a charge by order of the court. As soon as anyone mentions the word court and order and charge, people's ears immediately prick up, particularly when it involves partnerships and the actions of other people, perhaps not yourself. So can you explain that a bit, just to give people some meat on the bone?
Yeah, of course. I think it is worth providing a bit more clarification on that. So what I'm talking about is a situation where a judgment creditor, so i.e. someone who's got a judgment against one of the partners in his private capacity, they can use Section 23 as a means of enforcing the judgment. They're not permitted to take any direct claim on the partnership assets, even though the partner will be the joint owner of those assets. But they can, in effect, create a situation where there is a charge over those assets. And there can be situations where they have a claim on the partner's share of those assets or any profits of the partnership that come from the partnership. In those circumstances, the other partners have an ability where they can offer to pay off the judgment creditor. But then also, because it's a very unsavory situation and it's something that they don't want to be dealing with, there is also a mechanism for them to then serve notice on the partner who's been subject to all of that enforcement action in order to dissolve the partnership and remove them effectively from the partnership.
Okay, so as an example, if me and you were in a partnership, and of course I'm the sensible, responsible one, so you rack up a load of debts and problems as part of that partnership, and somebody goes after you for that debt, they can secure a charge over our partnership assets jointly, but in essence I can say, I'm not having this, I want you out of this partnership, and I want to make it so that the debt can be paid out of whatever assets, value, equity, profits that you may have otherwise gained or will gain as part of that severance.
Yeah, in a nutshell, it's a situation where the partnership has become subject to enforcement action because of amounts that, let's use the example of me and you. I haven't paid the judgment that I've got against me. Therefore, someone's decided to take enforcement action against assets that I have, and part of the assets I have include the partnership assets. You'd be able to pay them off so as that the partnership assets weren't at risk. But then, secondary to that, having removed them from the situation, you'd also have a right to dissolve our partnership.
Check out award-winning Johnson & Boone Solicitors' unique product, Legal Guard. Ideal for businesses and individuals, Legal Guard ensures you get the legal help you need when you need it. packages start from just £24 a month and include free expert advice, access to a library of legal documents, as well as exclusive discounts on a range of services. For more information, visit johnsonandboone.co.uk/legalguard and quote the code VERCHESH.
And that goes very much back to the business structures episode that we did, because anyone who will have listened to that episode will know that when you're talking about partnerships, you're talking about people's personal liability. So in that instance that you've given, it's actually if somebody's gone after you personally for something that might not actually have anything to do with our partnership arrangement. It might be just you personally have racked up a debt you might not have paid, I don't know, your mortgage or something like that. And the partnership, because it's you personally liable, will be seen as your personal asset, essentially. And that's where the latch comes on, isn't it? That they see that part of the business that you have ownership of, effectively, is an asset that they can try and get back their money.
Yeah, that's right, Mark. I mean, if you remember back when we were talking in that episode about the pros and cons of each type, one of the cons that we touched on in relation to partnerships is that you're moving from a situation, say, as a sole trader, where whilst there may be risks, it's only you that can cause those risks and be responsible. So in the situation in a partnership, you're also potentially at risk from the actions of the other partners that are involved. And this all, you know, we keep saying it, but it leads us full circle round to there should always be the correct documentation in place to set out everybody's roles and responsibilities. But focusing on the dissolution, it's there again as another protection mechanism that if something like that happens, it's enshrined within the Act that you can dissolve the partnership.
Well, thankfully, I know that if I was in partnership with you, I wouldn't have to worry about that. And I'm probably certain it wouldn't be you who would be the rebellious one in the world.
I think we'd have a fairly good partnership agreement as well.
We'd be all right. We would indeed. Produced by Johnson and Boone, of course. So what would be the third circumstance that we might find ourselves in wanting to dissolve the partnership?
Yeah, so moving on, and again, we'll stay in order, but on to section 34. And this is the dissolution by the illegality of the partnership. So we're talking about a situation where the partnership is dissolved by the happening of an event that makes it unlawful for the firm to continue trading. In terms of giving an example, a classic example would be a situation where the business operates within the arena of the sale of alcohol. Obviously, you need an alcohol license in order to do that. So if you reached a situation whereby there was no longer an alcohol license in place and there couldn't be an alcohol license in place for whatever reason, then the partnership could be dissolved. If you, we're solicitors. So if you take a situation of you've got two solicitors who are a partnership, in order to be a solicitor, you have to be authorised and regulated by the solicitors regulatory authority. If one solicitor was struck off for whatever reason, they could no longer be in that partnership. And therefore that partnership would dissolve and the existing partner would proceed alone, but the original partnership would have dissolved.
That's quite a straightforward one, really. If the business can't operate for those sort of reasons you've given, then it almost comes to an end, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, automatically.
Okay, we like clean and simple. What about the fourth one? Is that clean and simple?
No, this is probably the most complex of them. So this is section 35, and this all relates to dissolution by the court. So what we're talking about here is situations in which a court order is sought for a decree of a dissolution. So this is when one partner is seeking an order that the partnership needs to be dissolved. And there's a number of reasons. So it can be, for instance, where one partner is going to be permanently of unsound mind. And within the actual Act itself, it just shows how historic it is. It refers to one partner being found to be a lunatic, which is, you know, how
well, it's more specific. It's found lunatic by Inquisition, which is a very old English phrase.
Yeah, I mean, as we said at the start, we're talking about a very, very old piece of legislation, and I think that highlights it. Another instance would be if one partner was permanently incapable of performing their duties within the partnership. Another example would be if one partner was found guilty of conduct which was so significant in the opinion of the court that the nature of the business that they are carrying out is severely prejudiced moving forward. A further example, which is along similar lines, relates to if one partner is willfully and persistently committing breaches of a partnership agreement. Obviously, that can only be enforced by the court if there is a partnership agreement. One wouldn't be presumed. It would have to be an actual document. There is a mechanism within this section for the court to order the dissolution of a partnership if that partnership can only be carried out at a loss. And then finally is an overarching one which gives the court a bit more discretion to dissolve a partnership where they believe it to be just and equitable. So that's a nice wide one for the court to consider any set of circumstances that they wish, really. And it's probably because that last one's in place that this hasn't had to be amended, because as society has changed and things have moved over time, anything that doesn't fit into the mould of the others would just be mopped up by that section.
Well, you beat me to the punch there. We sound like a broken record when we keep saying that you ideally need a partnership agreement in place, not least because it deals with things in a more modern context. The finding of a partner as lunatic by inquisition is essentially a suggestion that they are not necessarily mentally capable of being a partner within the business. But the descriptions that are within the legislation are obviously based on the presumption and understanding of mental health in 1890, not the mental health understandings and definitions as well as are found in 2020, which are completely, well, they couldn't be any more different, could they? And as you say, that final overarching power, which is if it feels that it's just fair to dissolve it in those circumstances. But we're talking very grey area definitions here that give the court power, and usually when you have a grey, ill-defined reason to try and dissolve it, that usually opens up for more scope for arguments and therefore more litigation, and litigation therefore leads to costs and a less clear prospect of success, which then leads you right back to, if you have a nice clean agreement in place, you can head off a lot of these problems early on.
Yeah, you can. And in any event, it should be a very small proportion of cases that require intervention for court. If someone is looking to dissolve a partnership and they get in contact with us, we'd always only revert to the court as a very, very final option. And in most cases, certainly if there's a situation where the partnership is underpinned by an agreement, then the negotiation between the partners and dissolution can be agreed. It's just a case of on what terms.
Okay, taking the situation then, we've got the partners, they're happy to dissolve the partnership. How do you go about doing it?
So it will differ slightly depending upon the situation. So if we imagine a classic example would be that one partner intends to carry the business on and another partner is going to leave and for pastures and year and do something different, there's a number of things that would need to be decided and agreed. So I would expect in most cases the leaving partner will be getting paid something for their exit and passing over. So it'll be a case of negotiating any monetary amounts, deciding what will happen with any existing liabilities, deciding what's going to happen in relation to any assets. And then a dissolution agreement would be drawn up and reached, and the dissolution agreement will set out all of those things. it's often central as well to those negotiations as to what indemnities the leaving party wants from the remaining party. And what I mean by that is they will provide an indemnity against them later having any problems or any liabilities that come from the partnership, and everything is directed to those that remain moving forward.
And who can Johnson and Boone represent in these kind of circumstances? Obviously, you can act for an individual partner in helping that process, whether it be them looking to exit and negotiate severance terms, or a partner who's looking to stay on and therefore is looking to buy them out. You can deal with and act for partners who may be trying to get forced out and they don't feel that they should be able to do, I assume. What about, are you able to act for more than one partner? So if there's, say, three partners and two want to remain and one doesn't, are you able to deal with that, given that they're individuals in their own right?
There are situations in which we can act for more than one partner, but it would normally, let's say there's three partners and two are remaining, it might be that you act for the two who are remaining because there's no conflict of interest in relation to what they're trying to achieve and what the exiting partner is trying to achieve. And there will be situations when even that can't happen for different reasons. But we could never act for sort of both sides of the coin. So we could never act for the party that's leaving and the party that's remaining, because, as I say, their interest would be different and there would be a clear conflict there.
So you can act for either party, but you just can't act for both, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. If you're moving the partnership dissolution along, how does it all get recorded? How do you know that you've reached that finishing line?
So once we reach a situation where all the terms are agreed in principle, we would then draft a dissolution agreement that we've referred to a couple of times. And that's the document, really, that is the final, we'll call it a contract between the parties, that will officially dissolve the partnership. Or more importantly than dissolving the partnership, it will set out all of the terms upon which the partnership has been dissolved. So it's going to record how assets have been dealt with, who's been paid what amounts, the dates of dissolution. It'll include details of any indemnities or any warranties that have been given by either party. And it's a nice sort of finality for people as well, because they go through this whole process and then the executing of this document at the end and the transfers of any money, etc. It's a bit like at the end of an acquisition. It's nice and final. And the parties move on from that point. It's useful in as far as it makes the parties take stock of what they're actually asking for before they split. So we said earlier on, it can just be done orally. And you don't need any legal representation if you don't want to. There is scope for that to happen. But by not going through the process, there'll be lots of things that you haven't thought about. For example, your name might be stated on a lease that the partnership uses. If you haven't been through a proper process and received a proper advice, it might be that your name ends up staying on that lease and you've walked away. And then in time to come, you get dragged back in because you're still responsible for any defaults. So it's a process which allows all the loose ends to be tied up, recorded properly, and then signed off by everyone so that it is nice and final.
Again, you beat me to the punch there. In the previous episodes when we were talking about business structures, we mentioned how when there's a liability to a partnership, it's a liability to the individual person. You gave a great example there about your name might be on a lease. Obviously, that probably extends to things like bank loans or money's owed to people under a contract. They're then sort of settled, it's agreed how that amount will be dealt with, whether it comes out the proceeds of that partnership asset value for that particular partner, or whether or not the other partners assume those responsibilities, I assume.
Yeah, there can be all sorts of things. We've given an example there of a lease, but it could be that there's existing bills. It could be that there's all sorts of things with your name on it. As a in the same way as sometimes it can happen for directors of limited companies where, let's take utilities for an example, you know, your personal name ends up on something and then it needs to be rectified and made accurate if it's in the position of a company. Well, if it's a partnership, it wouldn't be unusual for your personal name to be reflected on things like utilities. So you need to make sure when you're leaving that your name's going to be removed and any balances that are owed are either going to be transferred to whoever's remaining, or you've got an indemnity that they're going to cover you for them moving forward. If there's any loans, then you need to make sure that not only it's agreed that you can be taken off, but also the lender has agreed to take you off. So there's lots and lots of considerations. And the initial process that we go through with someone would first get them thinking about all those things. And it would only be once everything had been thought about and considered that we would start putting pen to paper and any drafting would be done.
So if people do want to get more information or find out where they stand, that initial consultation is the main port of call. How would they go around making the arrangements for a consultation?
Yeah, they can get in contact with us in any of the normal ways. So they could send us an email to info@johnsonandbyrne.co.uk. If they've got our app, they can book an appointment on the app straight into, in this instance, it would be my diary. They'll see my availability and they just pick a slot and it drops straight in there and I'll give them a call. They could go on the website and drop us a message, or they could look us up on any of the social media feeds you mentioned earlier on.
Brilliant. So hopefully that's answered a lot of the questions that you might have had, particularly obviously the listener who specifically requested this topic. If you have any other topics that you'd like to suggest, they might follow on from this. They might be completely different. There's obviously a range of services that Johnson & Boone offer, which you can find on the website and the mobile app. If you check those out and have a think about some of the legal questions that arise from those areas, then drop us an email to using the email address Rob has just given. You can send a direct message on any of the social media feeds, or you can contact us through the website and we will more than happily pick up the topic in the same way as we've done today. It doesn't have to follow on from the previous shows. You can check all those shows out, as I mentioned previously, on the website, the mobile app, or on the major podcast platforms. If you want, don't forget that you can check out the download the free recovery business guide that Rob mentioned at the outset. Well worth a read. It's you're not parting with any cash. It's completely free to do. And actually, in order to get it, you're essentially subscribing to receive some extra advice and tips. So we'll probably in the future do some more business guides, some free tips. There'll probably be some offshoots as well from the podcast show that we can then make sure that you will receive directly to your inbox. So it's a great way. It's obviously GDPR compliant, so there's no spam, which should hopefully give people that peace of mind that they're not giving up their information only to receive an email about a personal injury claim 3 years ago. Because you don't do that, do you, Rob?
No, we don't. No.
So you don't need to worry about those kind of shenanigans. What topic are we going to do next week? Are we still opening it up to the public, or are we actually going to choose one ourselves?
No, I think for now we're going to leave it open to the public. As we've mentioned a few times, it's important that we're speaking about things that people want to hear about. And it might be really topical, so it could be something that's going on at the moment that people want us to cover in a short podcast. Or it might just be an overarching subject. You know, there's lots of things that we haven't covered yet. So there's lots of property things that we haven't done yet. We haven't touched on wills or trusts or anything like that. So there's lots and lots of services that we still offer that we haven't spoke about yet. But it could be something really niche. You know, it could be someone's got a really specific burning question. And if they drop it over to us and we think it would make an interesting show, then we'll try and put that in place for them.
So you get to decide, guys. Will it be Rob with some business advice and some tips? So could it be Jonathan doing some more family and child matters? Could it be Chris Johnson, who does divorce and employment matters? Maybe it'd be Mark Johnson, who deals with landlord and tenancy matters. Perhaps it could be Gina from the team, who deals with the wills, lasting powers of attorney, probate matters. Or might it be Janice, who talk probably about things like trusts and land. So you've got a whole range of Johnson & Boone experts with a whole range of areas and topics. The power is in your hands. You get to decide who it is that you get to listen to next week. So use it wisely, guys. So without further ado, thank you very much once again, Rob, for another great show. That's been really useful and very interesting today. And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Get social at Johnson & Boone on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.